You're listening to 10 Radio, broadcasting on 105.3 FM, streaming on the web at 10radio.org. And now it's time for something completely different.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Somerset is go!
Good afternoon and welcome once again to this week's edition of Somerset Is Go, and it's the programme designed to help businesses and you through the recession. Now this week there's the story of the Wellington Economic Partnership and how it helps the town find funding and assistance with initiatives designed to keep Wellington viable in these difficult times, and also I'll be talking to Pat Short, whose business Shoes has just passed the 25-year milestone, and I've got no doubt that Pat will have many hints and tips for businesses just starting up who will find themselves in their first or second year about survival in these difficult times. So lots of things to get on with in the programme. And where do we go from here? Well, I think before we do that, we ought to hear something like this.
Sponsored by Taunton Deane Borough Council through their Recession Relief Fund. The fund was created to support organisations such as 10 Radio, helping local communities deal with the effects of the economic recession.
And our thanks indeed to Taunton Deane Borough Council for sponsoring the series of programmes. Now, as I say, there's lots of things to get in the programme, so I'm going to shut up at this point and we'll go straight away to our first guest. If you've been listening to Somerset Is Go over the last few weeks, you will have heard of the Wellington Economic Partnership. I'm going to talk to John Pragnell now about the history of it and what the Economic Partnership can achieve for Wellington. John, welcome to 10 Radio once again.
Thank you very much.
What are the aims of the partnership?
To facilitate economic growth within the community of Wellington and to bring together various parties that can work together for our benefit. Well, we also have our own initiatives which we have pressed for the benefit of Wellington. And one of those, as you will probably know, is Food Town, which has been incredibly successful, which we started in 2006 in a small market in the car park of the Conservative Club. And that, much to our surprise and delight, attracted 5,000 visitors to the town. We then went on to run a street fair in the High Street. That attracted 10,000 people and was very popular. And then we went on in 2008 to hold the food festival in a marquee supplied to us by Wellington School. Unfortunately, that ran over 2 days of the most deplorable weather we have ever seen in July, but we still managed to attract over those 2 days between 10 and 12,000 visitors, and it was very successful. We are now working towards the festival for 2010, which will be held on the 4th of September this year. In addition to this, in the meantime, we have been working very hard on the Market and Coastal Towns Initiative. Now, that was a government initiative, I suspect using European money, but it was an opportunity for us to create a vision for Wellington, which has now been completed and printed, and we had the opportunity there of inviting people from all groups in the community, plus individual residents of Wellington, to hear their views of what they'd like to see Wellington develop to in the next 20 years. That has provided a plan for politicians to promote some of those ideas, and perhaps more importantly at the same time, to allow people of Wellington to achieve what they see as the correct path for the future of Wellington.
So the economic partnership is developing ideas to improve commerce within the community, to bring awareness of the community, and to make Wellington the focal point of a number of events in order to raise the profile of the whole area, and the intention being to benefit the town and the community to the maximum.
The Wellington Economic Partnership, when it was founded at the beginning of this century, was designed to incorporate the views of many public groups. So it consists of councillors from all three councils, plus members of the Chamber of Commerce, and this provides a direct link between all of those people that work in the community, and everybody now is able to discuss ideas, to see where a promotion idea might benefit the town, and so move forward.
In these difficult financial times, what effect do you think the partnership has had on the town in terms of its viability?
Well, I think, as already mentioned, our initiatives with Food Town have brought more people to the town. Our purpose there is to try and combat the drop in retailing. Shopkeepers have had a very hard time. Yes, because of the recession that we're going through, but also there are other threats developing, namely TV channel shopping. Internet shopping. They can go there and they can buy goods from people who are not having to pay the expensive things like rates, rent, etc. And so it gives those channels an unfair advantage in many ways. But also, people are very happy to sit in their own home and order whatever they want without having to go out. Now, that may well be good for saving petrol, etc., but it's not good for the shopkeeper. We try and redress that by increasing the number of people that do still want to come shopping in a town like Wellington, and we think we're succeeding.
One of the paradoxes of what you mention about internet shopping is you ask these same people who buy on the internet and they'll say, oh, isn't it sad that small shops are disappearing from town centres? You know, we like our town centres to be interesting with lots of small shops. How do you get them to change their mindset so that they can support the small shop rather than the internet?
I think we have that very hard task of educating. Governments for years have found it very difficult to change people's views. We, however, feel that by getting people into this town, this will combat some of that. But the bottom line is, we have to say to people, if you don't use this facility, you will lose this facility. Now, how many times have you heard that said, primarily by politicians, etc., but it's a truth.
And again, it's a fact of the world that when a facility is lost, everybody immediately jumps up and down and shouts, because they say, oh, this is terrible, this is awful. But it's all within our own hands to make sure that these facilities remain in the towns and cities that we have.
Absolutely right. One could use an example of how often have you seen a bus service that's been withdrawn because of lack of people travelling on that service. The same applies to your shops. It's no good jumping up and down later when you've lost that facility and you've lost your favourite shop maybe that's along the road. It's too late then. If you really want to make sure that our community thrives, you have to support those doing business in that community. The same as you would support perhaps a sports club. You need to use that facility, because sure as eggs is eggs, you're going to lose it.
The great advantage that a small town has, and most of the small towns in the West Country are the same, we can offer a level of service and quality that you might find difficult to get elsewhere.
One of the things I found when I first came here back in the 90s was I was confronted with a new phenomena to me. I had come from London, and here I am confronted with people that cared, people that were friendly, people that were helpful. And it was just such a relief. And I think that's probably the reason I've got involved in various community affairs, because I wanted to put something back into a society that made me feel so welcome at what had been a very difficult part of my life, having come from one recession, and here we are back in another.
Thinking of recessions, a point that always comes to my mind is I've seen one or two now, because I've been in business over the years for about 30 years, and you see them come and you see them go. And if you see one come and go, you realise when you see the next one that it is going to go. But what you do find with a recession like the one we have now, there are an awful lot of people out there who are seeing a recession for the first time in business. And they've got many more worries than perhaps we have, who've seen one or two come and go. What advice would you give to them?
There is only one piece of advice, and I'm not sure it's helpful, and that is this recession will disappear. It's already showing signs of lessening the effect. But I do think that you've just got to be very strong-willed. You've got to hold on. And I have found that many of the businesses that I come into contact with in Wellington are having to work twice as hard just to stay still. It's not easy. At the same time, you find that your costs are going up. Now, I wonder why that is. Could it be the rates? It doesn't seem to make any difference to many of the authorities and utility companies that you are struggling and you have less custom, you have less turnover. Because whilst we want to attract people to come to our town and spend their money, we have to accept that they have less money to spend. Many of them are in the unfortunate situation of being redundant. How do you cope with that? You're living on benefits after a time when you've probably worked for 30, 40 years thinking that you would always be in employment. It is just not in your thinking that you should be out of work. So it's a mindset that you have to come to grips with.
We've mentioned that some of the ammunition for success is quality and service, but also the other thing that strikes me is the tremendous amount of knowledge that shopkeepers and business people have in this area. And that knowledge makes the buying experience, the business experience, something rather special.
That is exactly what you find in some of Wellington's small specialist shops. They know their product. They, from experience, know what you're likely to want and what will suit you. So half the battle is won in satisfying your needs. And they're very adept at doing it here in our specialist shops. Everybody is keen to help, keen to send you out of their doors with something which they know you will enjoy and will make you come back.
Something that I have always been very aware of when people used to come to me is that even if I didn't have what they wanted, their visit would be a positive experience in some way. So people would come through my door, I would either be able to give them information that would help them find what they wanted somewhere else, I could show them something they maybe hadn't seen before, or maybe talk with them about something that had opened their eyes to other aspects of what they wanted or what they were doing. And even if I didn't have what they wanted, it was a positive experience. And people would go out the door saying, "Oh, I enjoyed that. I want to go back." And that, for me, is the key of any business transaction.
I mentioned earlier coming to Wellington and find friendly, helpful people. I can remember coming through Wellington before we lived here and stopping to buy some flowers and a bottle of milk. But we also wanted a handle for a door. And the lady that we had been dealing with to buy flowers took us outside on the pavement and pointed to the shop. She said, "You'll get exactly what you want there." And sure enough, we did. But it was this sense of community, the sense of wanting to help, which was so refreshing and made us, in the end, buy our house in Wellington.
And it's always been said, in a country town, you walk down the street, it might take you 2 minutes to get to the shop. It actually takes you 10, because on the way down, you'll see four or five people who have the time and the trouble to want to talk to you. And this really makes you feel a part of the place that you are.
Oh, it does. And so very quickly as well. Now that I've been involved with the Chamber of Commerce and now the Wellington Economic Partnership, I know quite a few people. And I'm reliably informed by my wife that buying a loaf of bread takes an hour and a half. Everybody is friendly and everybody wants to talk. What a great way of communicating in this time when everything is very technological.
I think the other thing is that this is the age of instant everything, isn't it? You put an email out on the web, you expect an instant reply. A news story breaks on the other side of the world, you're expected to react instantly to it. Something happens, the government feel the need to react instantly, policy-wise. I think it's good to be reminded that the instant reaction is not always the answer, and you need to take time. You need to talk to people, get news, get views, and take time and get the considered approach to things rather than the knee-jerk reaction.
I was always taught, possibly because of my age now, that you need to look at all the possibilities. Now, you can't actually do that instantaneously. If you do, you might miss something out that's a very important factor in making that decision. So whilst it's very convenient to have emails, etc., flashing around the world, you do need to consider all the possibilities of a case, and I found that I still do that, probably because of my age.
Somerset Is Go is a programme about beating the recession, and time again in these conversations, looking at the world of business, we come back to quality, service and knowledge as the things that you can do, and the fact that a positive experience can be had by all when they come into and get involved with businesses in this area. Can you think of any other things that a town like Wellington can do in order to stand firm in a recession such as the one we've just experienced?
I think it has some natural attributes which have nothing to do with trade, and that is, for example, if you walk down our high street, have you seen the number of listed buildings there are? The architectural heritage of Wellington is just so great. Its history in the industrial field with Fox Brothers and Reliance and Swallowfield.
We do have a very great deal of history, particularly when you look at foxes. They go back nearly 300 odd years, and they've been a pivotal part in the development of Wellington. And yet somehow Wellington wears its history lightly. Unless you really look for it, you don't always spot it, but it is always there. Just look above the shop fronts and you'll see the different periods of development within the town. And there is the proof that through the ages, no matter what the economic situation has thrown at the town, it has survived and, generally speaking, been a prosperous town through the ages.
Yes, I think that's very true. Is that part of the character of Wellington, or is it perhaps part of the character of the residents of Great Britain? Because we don't give up easily, do we? In fact, I remember saying to somebody once who was visiting this country and complaining about our cricket, I said, ah, well, we always fight better when we're down. And sure enough, we won the match. Thank goodness.
I think cricket is a very good analogy for this, because a cricket match, it's you're taking the long view over 3 or 4 days in order to win the match. And it's very similar to the way that perhaps we ought to be planning for the future and doing business.
I think we need to look at what we have, i.e. quality of service, knowledge of product, etc., and just a warm, friendly atmosphere as you go into various businesses, not just the shops, other businesses as well. You find it wherever you go here, which I think is a godsend. But we've got to look at what happens for the future. What are we going to see as we come out of this recession, which I've already said I believe is starting to happen? I don't think it's going to happen quickly, but I'm sure that it has started. What are the latest things which are going to make a big difference? The most obvious one is the fact that Waitrose Supermarket has come here and opened, and they run their business on the basis of selling quality goods, giving you the service that you want. One of the things I find particularly pleasing is the efforts that the staff go to when you're looking for something bemusedly in one of the aisles, and they will take you to where it is and then make sure there's nothing else they can do to help you. I think that sums up the sort of attitude you get from the service in the shops. That quality of service is there, and I think it's going to, them coming here is going to make a lot of difference to the future of this town, particularly in the retail sector.
Let's have a look now at the outskirts of the town. There's quite a lot of development in new industrial parks on the edge of Wellington. This again is a sign, possibly, that things are livening up for the future.
Yes, I think that's true. They started this at probably not the choicest moment in the recession, but you can see that more and more people are coming there and starting up business already. On the roundabout, you can see there is a new hotel stroke restaurant. That's very encouraging. Perhaps one of the advantages which that has, and particularly the town of Wellington, is that we're 1.25 miles from junction 26 on the M5. That junction is the most underused junction on the whole network. In those circumstances, what a wonderful place to come and start a business, because your staff and your goods can get in easily. There is no unnecessary travelling time, and I think that probably says a lot for that particular site.
And employment opportunities as well for local people. Hopefully, an industrial estate of that size will bring opportunity for people within the area.
Let's take the restaurant and hotel. The very labour-intensive operations, because they run 24 hours a day. That in itself immediately doubles your workforce, and perhaps one advantage of it is to have that choice for people in Wellington to go and work perhaps in a totally different industry than the one they've been involved in before, but it's all about choice. I understand that the developers have recently made application for some office space. Well, that will give another string to everyone's bow when they're looking for employment.
It does seem a good place for a regional headquarters for almost anybody, because you are right on the motorway. You've got a town on your doorstep. There's a lot going, isn't it, for this area?
I think so. I would very much like to see a situation where perhaps there is enough demand to put in a 10,000-foot office block. Why not? We are told that the government are trying to decentralise lots of their departments. Thank you very much. Come to Wellington. You'll love it.
And, of course, there's a tremendous spillover for the rest of the area. If industry or offices come to Wellington, then you can look 20 miles around Wellington and the influence will be felt in places like Wibberliscombe and Milverton, and there will be opportunities there that didn't exist before.
It's interesting to note that, and to harp back on the opening of Waitrose, they are attracting more people to their shop from outside Wellington. On their first weekend, I'm told, they attracted 13,000 visitors. We have only got 13,000 people living in Wellington at the present time, but what an opportunity. If you bring that many people into town, there is another advantage. People shopping in Waitrose will be looking for a certain quality and service, and they will therefore want to look at the other shops in the town. I think, given the next 12 months, 24 months, that you'll find that other businesses will look at that and say, I can supply that quality, that service. I'm going to open up in one of the vacant shops in Wellington.
So in the depths of recession, there is plenty of light on the horizon. We've talked of many different ways that the town and the area can move forward. John Pragnell, thank you very much indeed for talking to 10 Radio.
This programme has been sponsored by Taunton Deane Borough Council through their Recession Relief Fund. The fund was created to support organisations such as 10 Radio, helping local communities deal with the effects of the economic recession.
And some wise words of wisdom there from John Pragnell of the Wellington Economic Partnership. I think it's time for a small musical break before we move on to our second guest for Somerset Is Go this afternoon, and that'll be Pat Short from Shoes, again in Wellington. She's just celebrated her 25th anniversary in business. And as I mentioned before, maybe she's got one or two tips that are worth passing on to all of us. But a little musical break now. I'm going to take you a long way away from Wellington, off to the Caribbean, Jamaica and Kingston Town.
Thank you.
This programme has been sponsored by Taunton Deane Borough Council through their Recession Relief Fund. The fund was created to support organisations such as TEM Radio, helping local communities deal with the effects of the economic recession.
Welcome back to Somerset Is Go. I hope you enjoyed the musical interlude from Jamaica called Kingston Town. And just in thought, you thought you felt... I'll say that again. Just in case you felt you thought... Can I start this again? I think I'm going to go out of the studio and come in. You might have noticed some local atmospherics on the music, and that was because it was recorded at the Fitzhead Country Fair last year. So local music on a local programme. How about that? I think it's time now to go to my second guest, and I think you'll find this interesting. It's a milestone to reach a quarter of a century in business. I've managed 30 years myself, just about, but 25 years is no mean feat, and here's somebody who's done it. 25 years in business is quite an achievement, and I'm going to talk now to Pat Short of Shoes in Wellington, who's just passed that landmark in a business, a quarter of a century, doing what you enjoy most. Pat, welcome to TEN Radio and to Somerset Is Go. In the beginning, why did you decide to start a business?
Well, I was looking for something I was in control of and something I was going to enjoy. I liked the idea of shoes, and actually it was quite handy that the shop was close to my children's school, so I was always going to be available to them, which sounds a strange reason for picking a spot. Not much more thought than that, really. In 1985, you didn't have to think quite so deeply about the business you were going to start. You could take more of a gamble, I think.
I think you've hit a nail on the head there, because I started in 1981 in the shop next door to where you are now.
Yes, we were
neighbours. And so our businesses sort of grew together. And I remember in the early days, not like it was now, I had to pay a premium just to take on the lease on the shop. Now, this is unheard of these days. You'd probably get a year's free rent these days.
Right,
but
probably, yeah.
Did you have to pay a premium to come in here?
Yes, I did, actually. When I look back, I'd forgotten about it. But yes, I did pay a premium. And was very grateful as well.
Well, yes, shops were fairly full in Wellington, and if you wanted one, you almost had to join a queue. And I remember on mine next door, I had to pay £5,000 premium in order just to get the lease, and then I had the rent on top of that. When you opened the business, did you have to put a fair amount of money in to start it off?
Do you know, I think it was more or less on a wing and a prayer. It wasn't in the days when you had to do projections for the bank. You just took a stab at it and hope for the best, I suppose.
Yeah, you just sort of went ahead and did it. I certainly know, again, with my business that, well, it was rather different. Nobody else did what I did, which gave it some sort of a chance of survival. But you must have had competition in Wellington in shoes.
There was one other shoe shop at the time, I think. No, two, because Mr. Brunch was down in North Street. I tried to offer something different, different from the ones that were already here, which it's not a good idea to duplicate. And we seem to live fairly well in harmony, I think.
Yeah. Again, you've hit on a key point for success of business. You've got to be complementary to the other businesses around you and not in competition with everybody, because that way nobody survives.
No.
And so you happen to have picked a market, a niche market in the shoe market, that works very well in Wellington.
I think you're crediting me with a bit more foresight than that. It wasn't really picking something. It was looking for what wasn't available and seeing what sold. And gradually the business has become more refined, and I know what I want to sell now, whereas then it was trial and error. I've got to say, it's trial and error. And I think these days it's probably much more difficult to start a business. There's a lot more planning that needs to go into it. And I wasn't actually at the time looking to making a real living. It was something that I wanted to do. So I didn't have to think about it too hard, as people would know.
How long did it take before the business sort of found its feet and you thought, oh, this is going to work?
25 years on, I still have days when I wonder if this is going to work. I don't know. It's always been quite successful, I've got to say, in a small way. I mean, if it was fantastically successful. 25 years on, I would be sunning myself somewhere nice, I suppose. But no, it's always been, it's been relatively successful, and it's always been a pleasure. I've always enjoyed it, which I think is very important.
You mentioned earlier that there's a great joy in sort of having, you know, your finger on the pulse of everything that happens in the business. You know exactly where you are from day to day, what your stock level is, where your finances are. There is great satisfaction in running a business successfully.
Oh, yes, yes. And I do feel it's very important in a small business to know all those things and off the top of your head almost. Yeah, you've got to be very disciplined with your finances. And yeah, discipline is a good word, because with paperwork, it's no good letting things slide. You don't know where you are. Much as I hate it, I do keep on top of it, because it's just so important.
There's nothing worse than leaving the paperwork for 2 or 3 weeks and then having to catch up, because it takes you 3 times as long to do it as it might have done if you'd done it on a daily basis or even a weekly basis. So I would agree with you over the paperwork. Thinking back, how long did it take you to get your suppliers lined up, willing to supply you with what you needed? Was it a lot of hard work?
I was quite fortunate. When I had sat down and thought about what sort of business I was going to open, I hit on footwear partly because my brother was in footwear himself. He happened to be home recovering from an illness at the time. So I just went down and said, I'm thinking of opening a shoe shop. Can you help? And he was the director of a wholesaler. So he talked it through with me, planned some basic stock, gave me some names, and left me to it. And so, but I was very lucky to have some good advice, which obviously I trusted.
Well, you were saying earlier that you tended to sort of just take a flyer at the business, but from what you've said, it was a very considered decision. You did have expert advice, and you did go into the background before you opened the shop.
Yes, I did, because I think, actually, if I had had absolute choice, I would have always wanted to have a dress shop. And I didn't have any contacts in that world, so shoes was the next choice. If I'd had a dress shop, it was going to be called Frocks. So I had a shoe shop and called it Shoes with a Z. That's how it happened.
Well, the beauty of the name is, of course, that people immediately know what you do. When you look at the World Wide Web, in the early days, a lot of businesses invented fancy names and fancy email addresses that were all very clever, but they didn't actually tell you what they did. And I think the tendency these days is to be much more direct, both in naming, in advertising and everything else. Have you had any dealings with the internet in your business, or is it purely a personal business in a small town?
It is a personal business in a small town. I have considered the web. I don't think selling footwear actually has got to be terribly satisfactory online, although it's, you know, a lot of people do it. And I like to be hands-on. I like to be in control of what my customers buy. I like to have my input. That's what I enjoy, so that's what I do.
And of course, customers over 25 years, you get so many regular customers, they become friends. You know what they want, you know what they're looking for. You could almost read their mind when they come in, and they also know that you know what they're looking for as well. And this gives a great relationship of confidence between the shop and the customer, and probably means that you keep your customers for years and years and years.
Oh, absolutely, yes. And like you say, so many of them have become friends. Even sometimes only friends in the realms of the shop, but still very valued friends, as are neighbours in other trades. We've been next door to each other for 25 years. They feel like extended family, I've got to say. You know, we're very fortunate in Wellington to have that sort of rapport between each other.
I certainly found this when I was in South Street with a business. Most of the shops in South Street then were individual shops. There were no big chains or anything like that. Everyone knew everybody, and the problems, the difficulties and the successes we had, we knew about because we shared them and we talked about them. And there was a very strong sense of community in South Street, and I strongly suspect that it's still here.
Oh, yes, very much still here. You know, I couldn't stress that enough, really. We've supported each other through thick and thin, and there have been some thin times. And, you know, really close friends, very close friends. Births, marriages and deaths, we've seen it all, you know, between each other, and being there for each other without wanting to make it sound, you know, anything. It's not. It's just very genuine friendships, yeah.
This, again, is the great strength of a small town, is that you can know the community that you're in. Can you think of any particularly lean times that the business has gone through?
Oh, yes, I can. The previous recession, the late 80s, 90s, I mean, that was very difficult. I've probably sat here and thought, if there's tumbleweed blowing down the street, I can well believe it. You know, there's no people out there, so there's got to be something. And I've had moments of panic. And then one particular time, I did think, should I just wrap this up? But thought, no, just hang on, do your very best in your own way. And if it goes wrong, well, you can do no more, and you can fail honourably, if you like. But it didn't. I survived, and still here to tell the tale.
Something that is always important to remember is that recessions do come to an end. There are a lot of people now in business, having had a look at the latest set of economic problems, wondering if they are going to come through. But because we've come through an earlier recession and we've sort of been through it now at the other side, we know that there is life beyond the recession. So it actually gives us the tenacity and the confidence to sit it out, I think.
Yes, I think you're right. I don't think you ever stop worrying, and this recession is different to the last one. I actually don't think it has affected us as much as the last one. With the high interest rates last time, it created so many problems. But yeah, you're right, you have got more confidence to sit it out. But then again, I suppose I'm older now, that I'm not looking for a lifelong career. It's easy to be wise after the event, isn't it? It's easy to be wise when you have that confidence. So I wouldn't like to give any smug answers to people who are anxious at this time, except that, yes, I'm pretty sure it will come to an end and things will brighten up again. And I do think I'm very optimistic for the rest of this year. Goodness knows why, but I am.
And the funny thing about this most recent recession is that in a way I almost felt it coming about 3 years beforehand. Mm. There were trends in my own business that I could see, and I thought, ah, you know, and it was long before it was declared that things were a problem or one thing and another. Looking back on your last 25 years, have you ever had to borrow money in order to stay afloat, or have you always managed to finance your own business?
Unfortunately, I did start on an overdraft, and I struggled with that throughout that recession. Oh, I'll say I worked jolly hard to get rid of that overdraft, and I've always sworn since then that once I paid off the overdraft, which I did, then I would never ever go down that route or be in debt again, and have managed to stay that way and you know, never, if you like, let the banks get hold of me again. I feel I'm in control now. Gives me much more confidence with buying and what I stock. But I still, you know, a lot of people have got to borrow money. You've got to borrow money to start, maybe, or to finance ideas you have. You've just got to be very careful that you don't overborrow. It's difficult. It's very difficult. I would never borrow again unless I had a jolly good idea I was very confident with. I'm happy in my own little self-contained world now, I've got to say.
Yes, I too started with an overdraft, and it took me a very, very long time to clear it, and then it crept quietly back in again. So I've had trouble with that as well. But one of the problems you often see is people begin a business and they will borrow the money to start the business. They get 18 months in and it's not working in the way that they thought it might. They then have to make a decision. Do I call it a day, or do I borrow another 10 or 20,000 pounds and cross my fingers? And I have to admit that many businesses that I've seen that have done this have actually failed at the end of the second period of borrowing, and had disastrous results. And so I think that if you have a business and it gets to a certain point, you've got to be brave enough to say, OK, maybe I was wrong sometimes, you know, and maybe it's time to change direction. Do you see this happening now?
I do think people sometimes go into business with unrealistic expectations. You can't expect to open a shop and naturally get customers through the door. There's a bit more to it than that.
You're listening to this week's edition of Somerset Is Go, and I'm talking to Pat Short of Shoes in Wellington. Pat, one of the things we haven't covered yet is employing people. Now, a small business has certain problems employing people. How would you define the problems?
I've been singularly lucky over my 25 years. I've actually only ever had four people work here with me. And I say work here with me because I don't want them to work for me. That's not my way of doing things. In fact, it's so important that they arrive in your life. I couldn't possibly advertise for someone. I've got to feel right about them. And luckily, the four ladies who've been here have arrived at the right time. You know, cometh the hour, cometh the man, or cometh the woman. And my first lady, Joyce, she was walking down the back lane, and I knew her, waved to her through the window. She came in, and I said, "You don't happen to know anyone who might be interested?" And she said, "Do you know, I'm 60 now, and when I was a little girl, I always wanted to work in a shoe shop. So yes, please." And Joyce came to work with me from when she was 60 until when she was 70. And she was such a brilliant lady. And she stayed with me. She moved to Taunton, but she stayed with me until I could find someone else. And then Sally came along, who I knew from being a customer. And she stayed with me for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. And then she had decided she'd like to go full-time in her job. But she said she would stay with me until I found somebody I was happy with. So she did. And then Trudy came along, who was a younger lady. She was in her 20s at the time. She stayed with me for 2 or 3 years until she was having another child. So I was able to plan again. And Carol came into my life, who was a customer. And I actually said to her jokingly, because she's such a shoeaholic, I said, "You wouldn't like to come and work here, would you? Because I'm looking for someone." And Carol is actually a teacher. But she said, "Can you leave me to think about that?" And came back the next day and said, "Yes, please. My husband says you spend so much time in there, at least you'll be getting paid for it." So, and Carol is bringing us up to date. She's still with me. We're great friends. And I've been very, very lucky.
So the emphasis on what you're saying is that the people who you take into the business are as interested and as keen to maintain the levels of service and quality that you do, but also they're people that you know well, people you feel very easy with, and people you can happily leave the business to when you're not there. And so it's important that the quality of staff is equal to the quality of the business.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I do always emphasise that I don't want, when these people have come on, I don't want to be someone's boss. I want someone who's going to come in and do things in my sort of way. The customer is always the most important. I always say to them, just keep the customers happy and it'll be fine. I am, after all, only selling shoes. It's not a life-threatening thing, you know. So it's not that important in the scheme of things, but the customer's got to be pleased with their service and the quality of their product, and any problems dealt with in the same vein. So yeah, the staff are very important, and of course trust, and that goes without saying, and that's always been the case.
And so what you're saying again is that you're comfortable with your staff, they're comfortable with their job, and your customers are comfortable with all of you. And so it's a sort of a friendly, cosy relationship, and it's almost like a big family growing up over the years.
Well, Wellington isn't a tourist trap, is it? It's a town where we've got to look after ourselves, we've got to trade within the town largely. So we've got to sell to each other. We've got to keep each other afloat in a lot of ways.
And also, You've mentioned another important point here. A lot of people automatically, when they think of shopping, think of going to Taunton and going to the big sheds at Hankridge and going into the middle of town, and they forget that on their doorstep they have got a quality of service that you might not get in a larger, busier place, a much more personal service. And people should really be encouraged to shop on their own doorstep and keep the local economy going rather than spending their money further afield.
Well, yes, of course, because so many people want the shops here. So, yeah, we've got to support them. I try to shop with my local shops, even if it's Boots the Chemist. I try to use the Wellington Boots the Chemist or Superdrug in Wellington. We've got to be very aware of we've got to help ourselves. We're very lucky in Wellington to have quite a vibrant community, I would say. And the shop life is important to a lot of people. You know, people come in here and they expect to you to take their problems away from them. They find it difficult to find shoes, so they sit down and leave it to you to sort them out. And hopefully you don't get that in the bigger places, the bigger stores.
I think it's more difficult in a bigger store to maintain the dedication and the quality of your staff. If you're employing 100 people, mm-hmm. it's going to be very difficult to get 100 people with the same view of your business that you've got.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
And yeah. it is a tricky one to do. And this is where the small business can often have the upper hand, mm-hmm. because it understands to a much greater depth what is needed. And as you say, quality of service, quality of staff mm-hmm. says it all.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think you're going to be in, say, 5 years' time? Are you still going to be selling shoes?
I feel that I'm still very happy here. I still very much enjoy what I do. I've still got lots of ideas which I sort of waiting to pursue, to give different slants on the business and offer different things. I feel one day I'll know that maybe I've had enough of the shop or the shop's had enough of me, and that will be the day that I go. But at the moment, I anticipate that I shall still be here.
And looking at new businesses springing up around you, can you think of any particular advice that you might give to somebody who's sort of thinking about going into business?
Well, it's back to what I said, not to have unrealistic expectations. Enjoy what you do. Discipline. You've got to have self-discipline. You know, you can't spend money you haven't got. You can't. I think I pay myself a wage every week, and that's what I earn, as though I was working for someone else. And I think that's important. That all the money that comes into the shop isn't mine. Nice though it would be. I don't even look on it as money. It's just a means to an end of restocking the shop, paying the bills and going on from there.
The story of a business is always interesting, and I'm very grateful for sharing your story of your business with us, Pat. Thank you very much indeed for talking to Somerset Is Go.
Well, it's been nice to chat to you, Philip. I'm sure I shall see you again.
May you have many more successful years in business.
Thank you. Thank you.
This programme has been sponsored by Taunton Deane Borough Council through their Recession Relief Fund. The fund was created to support organisations such as Ten Radio, helping local communities deal with the effects of the economic recession.
And my thanks to Pat Short there for taking part in the programme. Looking at the clock, we're about 10 minutes off the hour. I've got time to have one more guest on the programme, and it's somebody who's been in the news lately. You might remember that the budget, there was a 10% tax put on cider, which has since been delayed, I think. This interview was done just before it was delayed, but it was an interesting insight into the world of the cider business. So let's have a listen now to Louisa Sheppey. Cider is very much in the news today, and I'm going to find out a little bit more about the cider industry and also how the budget has affected it. And who better to talk to than Louisa Sheppey of Sheppey's Cider. Louisa, welcome to Ten Radio. How long has Sheppey's been manufacturing cider on this site?
On this particular site, I know that the family came down from North Somerset in about 1916, so quite a long history here.
Cider is very much part of Somerset's heritage. Who would the main customers have been in 1916?
Well, I know from some old documentation that goes back a long way that the family was already promoting their products in an active advertising way, which I don't think was tremendously common in the farming fraternity in those days. But I guess a lot would have been widely drunk by just local men and people passing on the A38, because you do need to remember this road through here was the only one from Yorkshire to Cornwall, and we were right on it.
And so there was a thriving local trade and maybe a bit of export trade as then, even in those days as people passed by on the road. Obviously Sheppey's had a name for excellence, which it still has. The market today is very different.
Our market now, compared with even over fairly recent times, has extended nationally. We've benefited from trade with supermarkets that's taken our products wider around the country than really we'd ever been before. So people know about us far further afield. For us, we hope in the future to be extending our markets into the pub on trade, and we're investigating going into that now, which is new to us.
Are there developments in the kind of cider that is now being produced?
I have seen cider products that are starting more widely to incorporate fruit flavours. We know that there's a large market still for pear ciders, and as they're called now, Perry's really. That's not one for us. In fact, neither of them are much for us, because our products are largely based on what we grow here on the farm. We could consider doing some fruit flavours. It's not one we've thought about at the moment, but the Perry ciders we don't do because we don't grow any Perrys on the farm. So we're very much traditional cider producers, as we always have been.
This leads on very nicely to the current budget and to the 10% tax on ciders. How do you think this will affect the industry?
I think that perhaps the industry as a whole will be quite sensitive to the possibility that more price-sensitive customers will drift away from cider, and if it becomes increasingly expensive compared with beer, they're going to start moving back towards beer, and that's going to worry the industry generally. It is a big duty increase, and I think for small cider makers with very loyal customers, we're hoping that a lot of those will stay with us. But really only time will tell, and we have every reason to think that the government, whichever government, is really going to keep coming back to this issue and start to increase our duty expenses in the future.
This figure of 10% is bandied about in the press, but what does it actually mean on the price of a bottle of cider?
In fact, for it's 10% plus inflation, so it's a little bit more than that. We expect that the price to the customer is likely to increase to between 5 and 10% a pint. And you have to remember that when people think the price they're paying seems to be above the duty that's been applied, we pass most of our cider on to other traders. The price, including duty, will be the price that they will add their margin to. Then VAT goes on the top of all of that, so the price to the customer appears to be a lot more than just the duty increase, and that's why.
So this is in effect a hidden increase. It isn't just the 10%, it's going to affect us a lot more than that. Is the cider market at the moment a growing market?
Over recent years it has been significantly, and right up until last year we were very pleased. We had a very good year and feel quite confident about the way the future's going. But we do feel rather anxious about the plans that this and possible future governments have for the industry as a whole.
Where do you see yourself in 10 years' time?
That's a long, long time, isn't it? There's every indication that this government and possible future governments will have to keep revisiting the alcohol issue, and their stated position seems to be increasingly that as a nation we're drinking too much at home and there are problems with overconsumption and public order on the streets, and that they need to address that. I can't see that issue going away. They have promised that in every future budget they will be reviewing alcohol duty, not just in our category but in all categories, I think, although we expect to hear more relating to cider. I think in 10 years' time I worry that we could be moving in the direction that we've seen the smoking industry go. I think that there will be increasing pressure on alcohol producers, and the market is, if under pressure of price, inevitably it's going to shrink.
Is there any evidence at all that cider is a major problem in society?
It's a very wide market, and we hear from the government and from figures in the other parties as well. You often hear them referring to cider as a particular problem, often referring to super strength and other ciders. The higher profile problem seems to be the element of drinking this in the streets. And although you can identify cider as a drink that is being consumed in that way, the problem itself isn't quite so simple, because if you increase the price of cider, make it less available or less attractive in that way, the only thing that's going to happen is that that drinker is going to get alcohol somewhere else. And so although cider has been perceived to be a problem, it won't continue to be a problem if another alcohol is cheaper and easier to get. And this is the issue that is the complex side of dealing with it.
Can I ask you about the strength of cider? Is it something which occurs naturally because of the process, or can you actually manufacture cider to differing strengths?
We produce traditional cider. What that means basically is we take apples, we pulp them, we press them, and we allow that to ferment to produce a juice. That will naturally produce a cider of quite a high alcohol content, starting at 6, anything between 6 rising to 8. That's quite high. You can control that in lots of different ways. You can add apple juice to keep the ABV lower. You can add water. That's not what we do either. So you can control it to an extent, but it's all about what you, your commercial decisions as a business and how you want to manage that.
We've been talking about the strength of cider. Are there ways in which that strength can be altered in the manufacturing process to comply with the tax levels and regulations in force at the moment?
Yes, there are. The nature of the problem for us as traditional cider makers, and for many other traditional cider makers, is that for many generations, in a lot of cases, they have made traditional quality cider from apples, from their own orchards, pressed and fermented into cider, and there's your product. And we have sold ourselves on traditional quality cider on that basis. So yes, we can do something about it, but for many of us, we would see that as not sticking to the quality that we regard as the essence of our product. So for smaller cider makers, really there are basically two choices. You can add apple juice, but that's not what cider's about. Or you can do re-fermentations and add water, but neither is that what it's about for traditional cider makers. And so we worry about having to compromise the standards that we have set for ourselves, the pride we take in our product, and how our customers perceive our product on that basis.
Louisa Sheppey there, talking about the cider industry and how it's moving forward in the 21st century. And we've very nearly come to the end of Somerset Is Go for this week. It's been a very full programme, and with a little bit of luck, I shall be in the chair again in a week or two's time, and the Somerset Is Go team will be filling the spaces every Wednesday afternoon, 5 till 6. So, from me, Philip Knighton, here in the Ten Radio studio, thank you very much in listening for Somerset Is Go. I can hear the theme music coming in the distance. The Eclectic Collection is coming up shortly. Bye from me. Stay tuned to Ten Radio, and Somerset Is Go!